There might be no better way to understand American culture in microcosm than through the Rotten Tomatoes ranking of Mother's Day. The critics employed by magazines and websites pan it almost universally. It has an even low for this kind of thing ranking of 8%. The audience ranking, on the other hand, is more positive. Several of the audience reviewers directly invoke those reviewers who don't seem to get it, or the snobbish media who panned the movie. I think it's fair to say that I found the movie to be uneven at best. The movie veers wildly in tone, the differing plots are insoluble, and many jokes are tossed out only to land with a silence. The movie is, if nothing else, a demonstration of the usefulness of sitcom laugh tracks. Perhaps my biggest complaint, though, is how the movie privileges family blood ties over those formed by choice, specifically marriage or adoption. And I could spend this review carefully excoriating the movie's ideological foundation, especially the way it reduces the possibility of women's lives down to two options, either having a career or having children. But I think that would be the easy way out. This is Gary Marshall's third holiday-themed ensemble movie, following Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. And to counter the "why on earth would they make another one of these" tone the press seems to take, it's quite easy to see why they keep making them. First, they are relatively cheap to make. Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve were each made for roughly $50 million, and Mother's Day, meanwhile, was made for a practically bargain basement price of $25 million. Secondly, they make money. Valentine's Day made $200 million, and New Year's Eve made $142 million. As long as Mother's Day breaks even at the box office, I think it's fair to say Father's Day will be in our future. And so it's better to engage with Mother's Day on its own merits. Mother's Day, as other cultural objects have done from time to time, best represents a certain fundamental tenet of American culture, a popular tendency toward what Richard Hofstadter called anti-intellectualism. As he defines in his book, Anti-Intellectualism in American Life, this tendency is a resentment and suspicion of the life of the mind and of those who are considered to represent it, and a disposition constantly to minimize the value of that life. Thus, the positive reviews about the movie champion it as non-thinking fun and wish critics would stop overanalyzing it. Hofstadter argues that this kind of anti-intellectualism is not something shameful. It is, in fact, a byproduct of a deep belief in democracy. If critics, like intellectuals, tend toward complexity, many viewers desire simplicity instead. Dismissing the movie as sappy and contrived misses what's interesting about it, namely its engagement with holidays and public spaces. It reifies holidays, even the mundane, to borrow a phrase from Carl Ann Marling, as a time when utter perfection seems within reach. Additionally, because the movie is interested in overlapping narratives, parks, grocery stores, hotels, and hospitals become the places where those interactions happen. At times, the movie almost serves as a kind of advertisement for filming and living in Georgia. Come look at the beautiful vistas, the temperate weather, and the beautiful suburbs. This public space is actually quite small, as it contains little of the downtown or anyone of color. Instead, the movie privileges the space of suburbia, families, cars, errands, and kids' sports that are overwhelmingly white. This, as it turns out, though, is the actual stuff of some people's lives. And while critics dismiss it as uninteresting, it should not be dismissed as unimportant.